Steve Koprintz is managing partner at Koprintz Law and writing on the Small GovCon blog. Steve, I know you can bid low and win a deal, but how do you bid zero and get a deal in government contracting? Thanks for coming on today.
Hey, thanks for having me, Francis. Appreciate it. Yeah, you'd think that, zero might be a bit too low for a fixed price contractor, but apparently not, at least in a case that recently came up at the GAO, and this is a case called LCP Tracker. It was just decided a couple weeks ago, and in that case, HUD, Housing and Urban Development, put a solicitation out on the street for web-based payroll tracking services. As a small business set aside, and under the solicitation, the winning bidder was supposed to provide payroll tracking services for 6,000 different users, and it was going to be a fixed-price type award. And so there were three offers submitted. There was LCP Tracker, which submitted an offer of about $1 million. Another offer submitted about $450,000. And then you've got the winning bidder, a company called Alation, and they submitted a price of zero point zero zero to perform this work. And the agency was uncomfortable with that. There was some discussion with the SBA under what's called certificate of competency. But ultimately, this company, Alation, was awarded the contract at a fixed price of zero. And the issue came up to GAO as part of a bid protest. These other companies that had submitted actual dollars said this award was objectionable, that there was not what's called consideration. Consideration is a, you know, contracts 101 law school theory that says what the valid contract, both sides need to benefit somehow from it. And if Alation isn't getting paid, how are they benefiting? And GAO said, basically aping what Alation had said responding to the protest, that mere exposure to these 6,000 users was sufficient benefit for Alation to be able to have consideration and to get the award at a low price of zero.
There's a lot of implications here for all kinds of things when I think about it. You know, there's the idea of benefit that you derive from something. We see this in disclaimers, I guess, in other areas all the time. And I'm no lawyer. That's your job. And that's why I bring you on the show. But I see that concept, that word consideration, show up all kinds of places. And sometimes the word cash is next to it, which implies to me that there can be other kinds of consideration. So I guess I'm surprised that HUD and the companies that were involved in this, when they first looked at this, didn't think of that. I mean, I guess it doesn't happen too often, but still, it's not like it should be a completely foreign concept, Steve.
Yeah, it shouldn't be, and I don't think it happens too often. In some cases, the ground rules of a solicitation would perhaps prohibit that or make it less likely. For example, an agency may put in their solicitation that they're going to evaluate what's called price realism, which is essentially the question of whether a fixed price is too low. I'm assuming that was not included in this solicitation. But yeah, I mean, consideration is the concept of benefit. It usually is cash, but it doesn't have to be cash. This is not the first time that GAO has held that something other than cash can be a benefit. There were other cases that were cited here, and so Alation may have found what kind of looks like a loophole, but it was a perfectly legal loophole, according to the GAO. And then it's a legal sense, although it sounds weird, you know, as I'm writing this blog post on this case saying, you know, winning bid of zero is acceptable. But, and yet, as a legal matter, I don't have a basis to object to the decision. It seemed like the right decision from a legal standpoint.
And it's not out of sync with what we see in the private sector all the time in an environment where we say we want to see companies being innovative and presenting innovative acquisition strategies to government. I guess it makes sense that GAO would say, here's an innovative acquisition strategy, and we don't want to see this stamped out. We want to see people give this a shot. If they think there's a way that they'll make money on the back end to do it, as I say, we see this in the private sector all the time.
We do, and I would say, you know, I'd take it even a step beyond that and say, you know, GAO has held repeatedly that there may be cases in which a contractor, for legitimate business reasons, chooses to underbid, to lose money on a job. You know, in this case, maybe Alation's not going to make money on the job itself. Presumably they aren't. but they thought the exposure to these 6,000 users, who presumably they could then market seller services perhaps in other areas, was worth it, you know, that the bigger picture was worth it to them. And there may be cases where another contractor just wants their foot in the door. They want the past performance. There's, for some reason, they want to get a contract so badly that they're willing to lose money on that contract because they're taking the long view. And I think that's, you know, that's what Alation was probably doing here.
Steve Koprinz is managing partner of Koprinz Law and writes the Small GovCon blog. And you also write about a case called Noble Supply and Logistics. The GAO decision there had to do with a cut-and-paste problem. Tell me the facts of that case, Steve.
Yeah, cut-and-paste problem, and it wasn't the contractor doing the cut-and-pasting. You know, it was the agency, and this is one of those cases that gets my blood boiling a little bit when I read something like this. But what happened here is, you know, this was a DLA, Defense Logistics Agency solicitation, and they were doing DLA was doing a solicitation for maintenance, repair operations type supplies in certain geographical areas. They called it Zone 1, and Zone 2 was how they divided that up. And so in evaluating competitive proposals under one zone, essentially the source selection authority cut and paste in their the official evaluation document the source selection evaluation from the other zone, and there were, you know, repeated the typographical errors that were repeated between the two evaluations. Different companies had bid on different zones, and so there was, in a reference to the zone at issue in this protest, there was a reference to a company that had not even bid on that zone and how it was supposedly evaluated. It even went to now to the best value determination, the reason why the agency selected one company over another. The same company was selected in both zones. And so, you know, understandably, the losing contractor challenged this, saying, hey, you know, the source selection authority didn't really do a true independent evaluation, just cut and paste the evaluation from the other zone, didn't show any sort of actual judgment here, independent judgment. And the GAO is unusual for the GAO, but they will do this. They occasionally call an oral hearing. You know, usually the GAO decides protest just on briefs, but here they called a hearing, got the source selection authority on the stand, and the SSA said, no, you know, I started with that other zone's evaluation as a template, but I did an independent evaluation here. And the GAO deemed that testimony credible and denied the protest on this one. And so, you know, like I mentioned the blog post, I wasn't in that hearing room. I don't have a way to independently assess the credibility of this SSA, but I can tell you from the fact that this is, if nothing else, it's sloppy and it's lazy. And when you've got a contractor who's put in the effort to put together a really good proposal, to spend the time, the effort, the resources to do that, it seems to me the government owes them a little more than a cut-and-paste evaluation.
And you make a good point at the beginning of this post, Steve. I agree with you 100%. The GAO's recent decision highlights an uncomfortable truth of government contracting. While the government can and often does demand nearly perfect proposals, the government may be able to get by with sloppy or lazy evaluations. I guess there's nothing that people can do about it, but it strikes me as quite a shame.
It is a shame, and it's really tough, and it's true. I mean, you could, as a contractor, you could have a very minor mistake in a proposal, and the government might decide, you know, it could be the sort of mistake or error that's obvious on the face of the proposal, and the government could clarify that with a 30-second phone call and email. And it's been held in almost every case where this has come up that the government can do that if they want. They can allow you to fix that sort of minor mistake, but they don't have to. They could just, you know, in some cases, kick the proposal out for a tiny little mistake like that. And yet, you know, it comes to a situation like this where if nothing else, you know, I'll take the GAO and the SSA at their word that they, you know, this is not intended to be, you know, some sort of lack of independent judgment here, but at the very least, this is sloppy. I mean, this is a sloppy evaluation, and yet the contractor, Noble, in this case, is stuck with it, you know, sloppiness notwithstanding. It's just it's a shame, and it shows that there's kind of a different standard that applies to the contractor and the government. And I hate to say it is what it is, but that's kind of where it is. And it's like I said at the start, that gets my blood boiling a little bit.